Three, two, one. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello, Joe.
How you doing, man?
I'm young and handsome.
You are young and handsome. Yes, we all are, if we're not dead.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means.
It's all good.
I'm all jet-lagged.
Yeah.
It's cracking. How are you?
I'm a big bowl of wonderful.
You're a big bowl?
A big bowl. A fucking huge bowl of wonderful.
You're aggressive with that statement. I believe you.
I am. Yeah, don't doubt me with wonderfulness.
I don't doubt you.
Yeah.
It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you, too.
What's the latest?
What is the latest? About to start another season of the Goldbergs, another season of Curb after that.
Do you enjoy working with the fabulous Brian Callen?
I love working with Brian Callen. He makes me laugh all the time.
He's here later. He's going to be here at 2 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. So then I'll see him.
Or 3, yeah.
Oh, maybe not. But anyhow, point being is I dig Brian Callen very much.
He likes you, too.
Yeah, that's cool. Cool, man.
What's the latest with the stand-up career?
I
see you around the store a lot.
At the store on occasion. I don't do the store that much anymore because I've stopped doing showcase spots for the most part. I have a regular show every Friday night at the Improv in the Lab, and I do, you know, an hour and 10 minutes. And then occasionally I do Flappers, which is a horrible name yet in Burbank. But
great,
it's a
little club.
But a great room. A great room.
Yeah.
And I do there on occasion on Sunday nights. So I do an hour. Going out of the house for 15, 20 minutes, not worth my time.
When you do like an hour set, do you plan your sets out or do you have like some material that you like to be working on? And is that why you like the freedom of having an hour so you can just kind of fuck around?
I have no
loose?
Preparation whatsoever, except I may think, oh, I'll talk about that tonight. But I have no preparation. I may bring up a story I've told before, but I have no idea. Literally, when I step on stage, I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. What does help me, what I've done for quite a while now, is I come up to a different song every time I come up. And then I just talk about that song, the story of the making of that song, who sang that song, what that song means to me, and that will usually lead me to something. That's all I need.
Yeah, the reason why I ask is you have a very unusual style. Like,
yes.
I've seen you a bunch of times
yes,
at the store. You're very loose.
Yeah,
you know?
Very loose.
But it's a great thing because you
yeah.
have the confidence to do that.
Yes.
Like, a lot of people have to be, like, super rigid in their preparation.
Without a doubt, yes.
Say things set up punchline in the correct order every night.
I'm only confident in the fact that I'm funny. I am not confident in any other fact in terms of going on stage.
That's the most important thing.
It is the most important. And so I go up with the knowledge that no matter what goes down, I am funny and will be funny. Boom. Good night.
Boom. That's yeah. it. Good
yeah.
night.
Yeah.
And are you doing the road at all?
Hardly ever. When I do the road, I did London in December. Did a couple weeks of shows.
A couple weeks?
Yeah, a couple weeks at a theater there.
What theater did you go to?
Soho Theater. It's a small, cool theater.
That's like 500 seats or something?
I don't even know. I don't even pay attention. How's that?
I feel like I've done that. I've done Leicester Square. I've done a couple different places.
Leicester Square is good. Yeah, I'll go to London. I go to New York on occasion and perform. I've played everywhere. I've played everywhere from Indianapolis to Seattle to Miami, like, and all points in between, you know? Tucson, Phoenix. I mean, like, all over. I've done it. I'm 56 years old. I've got 2 TV shows. I develop a bunch of other stuff. I'm passionate about my stand-up. I get enough. I don't have to earn a living by going on the road, which right. I have had to in the past. So I stay home and do my stand-up when I can, which
that's
is every
a nice
Friday
thing,
for sure.
Because the thing
it's
that does
very
get
nice,
you,
and I've worked towards that. You know,
that's a beautiful thing to work yeah. towards. Because yeah. the thing that does get you is that travel.
Oh, you know, it was the thing that no one understands is the only joy that you can possibly get when you travel is the moment when you're on stage. And if that's troublesome or not fun, it's a drag. It's depressing.
Yeah.
But those moments on stage, if they're great, it's all worth it.
Yeah, no, it's the thing. Also, when you go on the road, if you have to do morning radio, and you have to do those kind of things,
that's the thing, because your health, it screws up your time. Uh-huh. You know what time you go to bed, because I like to set. I don't worry as much on a consistent basis what time I wake up, because that'll be automatic. I try consistently to go to bed at the same time every night.
Hmm.
It's a different approach that a psychiatrist told me, and it has worked wonders for me.
A psychiatrist told you?
Yeah. Because everyone always focuses on waking up the same time every day.
Right.
He said, focus on going to bed at the same time every night, and that'll be more productive for you. And I do that with a sort of a half-hour bump to fall asleep, to maybe read for a minute, whatever. But I'm in bed usually by...
This episode is brought to you by Hostage Tape. First of all, what a great name. This is a product that I use, and I started using long before it was an ad. Your sleep game is about to get a whole lot better, kids, because I want to introduce you to Hostage Tape. Put simply, it is tape for your mouth. But you're probably wondering why you should even need that. Well, if you're a mouth breather, if you snore a lot, or if you suffer from sleep apnea, this could make a big difference. This mouth tape can reduce or eliminate snoring and apnea, and at the same time, it'll help filter the air going to your lungs, increase your oxygen uptake, and improve circulation, which will make you feel more energized. It has tons of other benefits, too, like it helps with bad breath, dry mouth, and, of course, better sleep. For you and your partner, don't let bad sleep hold you hostage. Shut your fucking mouth with Hostage Tape. Buy it today and get a special buy two, get one free offer. That's a 90-day supply. Just visit HostageTape.com/Rogan. That's HostageTape.com/Rogan.
10.
I've never gone to a psychiatrist, but one of the shows that I was on, I was like the only person on the set that didn't go to a psychiatrist. Uh-huh. I'm like, maybe I'm fucked up.
No. By the way, if you're functioning in the world, that's great. Congratulations. I have sometimes trouble functioning in the world.
How so?
Well, it's like I find going on stage, I'm fearless. And I don't even like leaving my house. I prefer to stay home. I love napping. Oh, do I love napping. If I could smoke some indica and take a nap every day, I do transcendental meditation. I do all the chill things at home, and I leave to work. I don't like going to parties. I like a good dinner party because that means I can have an actual conversation with someone.
Right.
But I was just at a party the other night, a goodbye party for a friend of mine. It was at Jeff Ross's house, and I had the worst time. I lasted 20 minutes. The only people I could talk to were comedians.
Would be at Jeff Ross's party but comedians?
Well, some people with man buns in a hot tub. It was very unsettling and wrong. I wanted nothing to do with it. I said my goodbyes to my friend, and she's moving to Japan.
Oh, wow.
So I said my goodbyes, but it was out of respect to her that I went, but out of respect to myself, I didn't stay long.
Man buns in a hot tub is
right.
Never
you
a good combination.
You see a man bun in a hot tub, you go, I don't belong
it's
here.
Over. It's
I don't
over.
Belong here.
Yeah, you don't belong there.
Yeah.
That can't be done.
No, it's bad.
When did that start happening? When did the man bun
man
start?
Man buns, to me, like in a big way, a couple years ago.
It was like samurais, and then there was a big drop-off for
right.
a long time.
Samurais, and then a big drop-off. That's exactly it. I don't get it. I mean, why grow your hair long if you're going to wear a man bun?
I think
either
they
grow
like
your hair long
idea.
And dig it. Yeah, the idea of it, it's ridiculous. I was at a gas station in Studio City, and I was seconds away from talking to this dude. He had a man bun that looked like a bird's nest with a waterfall on the outside. Mm. And I just went, why? I just wanted to ask him. I go, I'm being totally friendly. I want to make this a conversation. Why? Explain. I don't get it.
I feel like what it is it's like they're letting you know that this is me when I'm out, but when I'm at home and I'm feeling sexy, I just undo that.
And let it down. I don't know what it is.
I just relax and I unravel.
It's a big bowl of wrong. It's a big bowl of wrong. And no, you're not sexy.
Let it go down.
You're douchey.
I'm feeling sexy.
You're douchey.
What's the longest your hair's ever been?
Mine? I had like a Jufro type festival happening when I was younger, like longer, curly, but not like shoulder length.
Right.
No,
it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
It's weird that hair grows that long only on your head. That's right. What's weird.
But by the way, like, if you're going, if you're a rocker on your arm, and you're growing like Robert Plant's head, cool hair, go for it. Right, don't man bun it.
Yeah.
Go for it. I'm all for long hair.
Rockers have different rules.
I saw a guy last night in a band, a bass player, big man bun, big ball around.
You know what I'm uncomfortable with? A CEO haircut in a rock band.
Oh.
What are you doing with that fucking button-down conservative haircut?
See, I dig that. I think playing against type is a big bowl of delightful.
Nah, not into
it. Joe, we differ on this one. Yes.
We do.
I think a group of men, like I thought David Bowie's band Tin Machine, I didn't really dig their music, but I love the look of all them wearing the suits with the close-cropped hair.
Well, Bowie is so odd and so undeniably creative that he was allowed to get away with anything
he
wanted.
Well, he's allowed to do anything he wants. Yeah. But truthfully, if you have any sort of confidence, you can. Except the man bun.
There it is right here.
Yeah, there it is.
History of David Bowie's.
Yeah, but that dude should have cut his hair short, the one with the long hair.
Maybe. But he's kind of John Travolta in Pulp Fiction-ish.
He cut it short.
There he is.
The pressure from the other three guys got to be too much.
He got tired of buying shampoo and all that bullshit.
Yeah, the upkeep is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
Yeah.
Dudes who condition their hair and they have to leave it in for 10 minutes.
Oh, that's a big bowl of, come on, man.
Come on, bro.
Yeah.
But for something, there's some reason why it is okay in a band, but it's not okay for a comic. Like a comic with long, like Led Zeppelin hair.
Because you know what happens when a comic does that? Their whole act becomes about it. And it's like, dude, that's just boring.
Do you remember Jackson Purdue?
I do remember Jackson Purdue.
Crazy long hair, like a band guy.
Yeah, a lot of material about his hair.
He did have a lot of material about
his hair. I know. I just, you know, I used to, when I was younger, I went for the obvious. I did a lot of material about having a big head.
No. Oh.
Now it's of no interest to me.
You couldn't also do like the Robert Plant shirt thing either.
I have a Robert Plant shirt.
Like,
not his.
You never like let it open down to your crotch.
I think it's called, said Nurses Do It Better, or Nurses, some with nursing on it. It's powder blue. He wore it on one of the Zeppelin tours in the early 70s, and I saw it for sale on Amazon, and I bought one. It doesn't give off the same vibe.
Yeah, it's different with different people, right?
Yeah, but I always, one of my non sequiturs to tell people all the time is, you love the nursing industry. I just say to people, you know what you love? You love the nursing industry. I've said that to nurses.
And
even.
What do they say?
People just chuckle. They don't know how to make it. You know, it's a non sequitur.
He's weird.
Yeah, it's a non sequitur. They don't know, you know, non sequiturs throw people.
Nervous laughter.
Yeah, nervous laughter.
There's a certain things, there's certain looks that came and went and people tried to bring back. Like, do you remember a few years back they were trying to bring back bell bottoms?
No.
Yes.
That's how much of a failure it was.
Bill Murray was actually photographed a couple of days ago at a golf course with some fabulous bell bottoms on.
Oh, see, that's delightful because it's so wrong that it's beautiful and perfect.
They're crazy, too. Look at the picture. Look at them.
Oh, see, that's a big ball. He's so fun, that dude.
He's wonderful.
He is just he is so fun. Look at him.
He lives in like South Carolina or something.
Yeah, well, I think it's because of his kids. That's
why.
Yeah, I think it was a family thing.
Oh,
that's a beautiful shot.
Bourdain's show, and Bourdain interviewed him in his small town where he lives, and it's like, wow, look at this guy just kind of hanging out, being normal. No girlfriend, no wife, just being himself now.
But you don't know that he doesn't have a girlfriend, or
he was talking about it.
Oh, he was talking about it?
I don't think he was talking about it on that show. He was talking about it in an interview.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to do it anymore. So leave me alone.
Yeah, leave me alone.
Stop.
It's delightful. That's why I like staying home.
It's nice.
As a matter of fact, at the end of my shows, I always thank the audience for actually leaving their homes to come see me, because I know what an effort that is, and I'm so appreciative of it.
So you're just a homebody type character.
Yeah.
Is this always been your
thing? Well, you know, it's like my life is extraordinary, so I want to live as ordinary a life as I can.
That makes sense.
You know, just calm.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be ordinary. Down, you know, chilling, man.
Yeah, you need that, right?
Yeah.
With the chaos of performing and
I'm not big
shows.
Like tonight I'm going to an opening of a movie. My friend wrote it. And, you know.
You got to prepare yourself for it. Here we go.
No, I'll be cool with it. Like, if I know I'm doing it and why I'm doing it, I do it. You know, but
as long as
the movie
not Jeff
sucks,
Ross's
I'll
party.
Leave. Whose party?
Jeff Ross's.
But, you know, I'd go to a dinner party if he had one again. I'm done, though, with the Jeff Ross parties.
Jeff Ross has a lot of parties.
But I know. I love Jeff Ross. But I am not going to any more of his parties.
Tell him.
I'll go by myself
tell
to
him
his
now.
House.
I dig Grab him. Put two hands on his shoulders. Tell him you love him.
By the way, I will. As a matter of fact, next time I see him, I'm going to talk to him about the man bun in the pool. Like, who are you friends with that has a man bun?
He's a producer, bro.
Yeah.
He's helping me with a project.
Yeah, well, he didn't look like a producer. Just
grab the
like
shoulders,
that.
Go, I yeah. love you. I can't come to your fucking pool parties anymore, bro.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it wasn't even a pool party. Oh. That was the thing. Somebody went, I'm going to bring my suit and my man bun and get in the pool. And he got in the pool with two other people. I didn't really notice that because it was man bun.
That's unfortunate. If it's not a pool party and you decide to get in the pool, that's always awkward as fuck.
Well, I just didn't belong.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to be like a really comfortable person to take off your clothes when everybody else has theirs
on. By the way, I'm pro-naked.
Good for you.
I'm pro-naked. I mean, too. For me. I'm all comfortable. Well, you're fit. The fact that I'm pro-naked.
Said it like you were angry at me.
No. by the way, I saw your little festival here. Your passions are comedy and fitness.
That's one thing. It's one thing
Cars,
I'm into. Yeah, well, I'm just...
American Werewolf in London?
Yeah.
Is that the thing in the middle?
Yes,
it is. I recognized it.
You did good.
Yeah. I love that movie. But that's when he was in Trafalgar Square.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I know. I remember that moment. Scary.
I'm not happy unless I'm exercising. I've tried both ways.
I'm not happy unless I'm napping. So
there
we both have our ways about us.
Yeah. Well, everybody's body's different.
By the way, I do exercise. I eat well. I eat gluten-free. I eat dairy-free, and I eat sugar-free.
That's awesome. That's a good combination.
Yeah, and I aspire to be more of a vegetarian, but I'm not obsessed with it.
Do you read books on nutrition?
I have read many books on nutrition, yes. Yeah, some that Brian Callen even recommended to me.
Really? Which ones?
I couldn't think of the name. Well, I probably have them in my phone. If you really want to know.
Brian Callen's a big recommender of books.
Yeah, Kindle. Hold on. I'll tell you what he recommended. And they were good. I learned. You know, every one of those kind of books, even if they're not well-written or whatever, I learn something from. I pick up. I read a ton. That's what I do when I'm at home. I read a lot. I listen to albums, and I read music, and I play guitar.
When you say albums, do you have like a record player?
I have a record player, and I have 1,000 albums. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys.
You have 1,000 albums?
Probably about 1,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
Do you have like a room that you go to? And you're like,
I'm moving into a new house, which will have a specific room that I will go into to strictly play guitar and listen to analog, which is albums. Yeah.
Do you know Henry Rollins at all?
I do know Henry Rollins. We're not great friends, I mean, but I do know him. He's an acquaintance of mine.
He's a fascinating guy.
He's a fascinating guy. Good man.
Very good man.
Dig that dude.
Very inspirational guy, too.
Inspires me. I dig him. I did an interview with him at Largo. I dig him big time.
He's got these crazy $250,000 speakers in his house.
Yeah.
They're like, there's his speaker room.
Yeah.
Look at this. This is the room. Well, so he has all these albums and those gigantic things.
By the way, the dude on the right, I think, is Robert Hilburn, who was the critic for the LA Times. That's how much I dig music.
Whoa.
I think that's Robert Hilburn. I'm pretty sure.
So Henry, who obviously became famous
wrote a great
as a musician.
Johnny Cash. He wrote the great Johnny Cash book that came out a few years ago, because I see you dig Johnny Cash by the pictures on the wall.
I love Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
I had a dog named Johnny Cash, just died recently, unfortunately.
My granddaughter's name is Johnny Cash.
Those speakers are fucking crazy. Look at these speakers he's got.
Yeah, I just got new speakers, and they were like $8,000 for a pair, and I thought I was nuts.
Look at the size of that
shit. That's ridiculous. That's like
$200,000, it says.
That's like 2001 A Space Oddity looking speakers.
I want to go over his house, but I don't want to ask. I don't want to be like, Henry, come on, bro. Let me come over to your house. I don't want to be that weird guy.
So I'm looking for the books.
That he avoids.
Because I know I downloaded them. I didn't want to own them.
But how many people do you think own those speakers? I mean, I think you have to be.
But that, first off, you have to be wealthy.
Yes.
Or that's where you want to put your money.
Click on that yellow one that you just. What's that?
Oh, that's the same speaker except in yellow.
Oh, okay.
Those are a big ball of run because they look like plumbing supplies.
Do they
don't look good. I don't think they look good.
Oh, I think they look good. I think they look futuristic.
Again.
They must sound
here
amazing.
We go. Why We Get Fat.
Oh, is that
by
Callen?
I can't remember the guy's name. Why We Get Fat and the 4-Hour Body.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Tim Ferriss' book.
Yeah, Tim Ferriss. And I learned stuff from both. But So I learned stuff about nutrition and stuff. And I'm at my most, I was 320.
Whoa.
And I'm currently in the 240s.
That's nice.
And I'm making the transition now to hopefully low 230s, somewhere in the 220s, and then building up muscle. And I'll never be fit like you, and I'm not saying that to insult myself in terms of, like, you know, but you, this is a passion of yours. It's not a passion of mine. I just want to live life at a higher level.
Right.
And a better level.
You just want to feel good.
I want to feel great.
Yeah.
And I already do, so if I can improve on this, delightful.
The big thing is cutting carbohydrates. Most people eat far too much bread, far too much pasta.
For me, that's where the gluten and the sugar came from.
Yeah.
And the dairy, and I feel good with my body not having those things. I react positively. So anything else is okay for me.
What kind of exercise do you do?
I do Pilates.
Is fucking hard.
Really hard. Yeah, I have a great Pilates teacher.
It's great.
I do. I swim. I work with a trainer. I play tennis. Playing tennis tomorrow morning. Today's Wednesday. Yeah, tomorrow morning I'll be playing with my tennis teacher. I play golf, which is not that physical. However, like, I was at the store buying stuff the other day, you know, at the golf store, and the guy was a very nice guy helping me, wanted to sell me something that I don't have to bend over to get the ball. I go, I think that bending over, and as a matter of fact, stretching my hamstrings, really, I don't know the benefit I'd get from golf if I didn't at least bend.
He's telling you not to bend?
Well, they have these things so people don't have to bend.
Well, that's for people with, like, really bad backs.
No,
right?
No, it's for lazy people. That's what I think a lot of people. So for me, it's a matter of pride to bend.
Well, because if you have a bad back, you probably can't swing either,
yeah,
right?
You can't swing, yeah.
Because it's a lot of your back.
But I do a lot of different things. I love sports. I used to play, when I was younger, I played baseball and football.
Do you ever play golf or tennis, rather, with Callen? Because he's a tennis freak.
No, I should actually. By the way, I just started again. I haven't played tennis since I was a kid. I'm actually going to talk to him about that. Hopefully we can play some.
The thing about tennis, though, is it's a lot of, like, going left and right and left and right and putting weird strains and pressures on your knees.
It's great for bone mass.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's good for it.
Bone mass. That makes sense.
You're pushing
off. Yeah.
No, I dig it. And by the way, I'm not going to play competitive with him. I'm going to hit with him.
Right.
Because he could probably beat me. He also weighs about 70 pounds less than me.
Yes.
So he can move better.
He's spry.
And he's been playing. He's very spry. He takes his physical fitness very seriously.
He does.
And he'll tell you about it.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I know.
Yeah.
He gets very serious about half-assing everything. He gets very serious.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Like, he's never going to commit to being like a professional tennis player.
Right.
But he'll get pretty serious about kind of getting into tennis. You know,
well,
what I'm
that
talking
works,
about?
Whatever, sure. Who needs the stress?
Yeah, but no, I'm saying it's like a good balance. Like, I get obsessed about things.
Mm-hmm.
He gets obsessed about kind of getting into things, but then doesn't go, like,
doesn't,
we started out doing jiu-jitsu together.
Follow through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You are a follow through fucking motherfucking follow through. All persons do is a walk around here and go, or look at you. You're a fucking specimen, you fucker. You're a specimen.
Just trying to stay sane, Jeff.
That's right. Are you married? Do you have a girlfriend?
Yep.
You're married.
Yep.
Yeah. Your wife must appreciate that.
What, the physicalness?
Well, you're a good man, but being looking over and going, my husband's not a fat piece of shit. He's a fit motherfucker, and I'm going to fuck his brains out tonight. Does
Whoa.
She ever say that?
No.
Okay.
Not around me, at least.
Well, she should.
Maybe I should start bugging the house.
You
find
should.
Out what she says when I'm not there.
When you're not there, I bet you that's what she says to her friends.
Are you married?
I can't answer. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to pressure you.
No, don't pressure me. That's like, I can't talk about that right now. Yeah.
That's probably good. Transition's healthy.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Things are in flux.
They're fluxing. I'm in a flux festival.
It's not bad.
Yeah. It's bad. There's no winning.
Oh. Yeah,
there's
I've
no
been
winning.
There before.
I love my wife, but I don't want to go home, and I love being alone, but being alone blows. So there's no winning. There's no winning. I'm a sad young man.
Ooh.
But I'm really happy. Like, because I'm functioning at a high level. I'm rising up. You know what I mean? I'm facing adversity head on.
Yes.
But, Yeah, my wife is a lovely woman. Lovely woman. Good woman.
That's one of the things about going on the road. You appreciate people when you come back.
Oh, my God, yeah.
When you're with them
every
day.
But do they appreciate
day.
You? Good night, everybody.
Yeah. Try the wings. Yeah, if you're there with them every day staring at each other. I mean, no, I don't care who it is. It could be your best friend on the planet.
Too much time with somebody, except for rare exceptions.
Right.
Wow, is that bad.
Yeah, it could be terrible.
Yeah.
It could be terrible.
Yeah.
Almost everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. People, you know, you need to be around variety in terms of like different
people,
styles
experiences,
of communication.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. And by the way, I don't stay home because I'm not like staying home because I want to avoid experiences. I like experiences and I'll go have an experience. But when I deem that experience, like Jeff's party, not good
inadequate.
For me, I leave.
Yeah.
But if I'm having an experience that's new, and I'm digging it, I'll stay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. No.
Well, you know what you like. That's a healthy thing.
I'm 56 years old, man.
Yeah.
I know.
You're a man.
I'm a man.
Yeah.
I am a man.
You're a man.
I'm Jeff Garland.
You're an actualized man.
I'm an actualized. I'm aspiring to grow all the time. That's my thing, to be a wise man. I aspire. My goal is to be a wise man, and I'll never reach it. Not that I'd be stupid, but I'm saying it's always evolving.
I have a friend, and many, many years ago, I was at her house, and she had this sign that said, "Enlightenment is possible in this lifetime." And I saw that, and I went, whoa.
Wow, that's
deep.
By the way, levels of it, and putting you at a higher place than you are, I agree with. But true enlightenment, I'm kind of, I'm not cynical. I have more of a critical eye. There you go.
Right.
But that's possible. I'm not cynical.
I've never seen it.
I've not seen it, but it's like I'm not going to deem it impossible because then who am I?
And
that's like me saying there's no God. That's like me saying I'll tell you who killed Kennedy. I don't know.
Right. And it's also what exactly is enlightenment and by whose standard and definition.
Right. Well, so maybe if you have a very low standard for enlightenment and you reach whatever that level is, you go, I did it in my lifetime. Look at me.
Right. If you're smoking indica, listening to great music, and having fantastic sex after a great meal, and then someone says, no, you're just supposed to meditate and just sit in a room and you know, be mindful. Okay, how about fuck you?
How about a big bowl of fuck you?
Yeah.
By the way, can we make that happen for me, that I smoke some indica, listen to some music, have some great sex after a great meal?
Totally
how do I
possible.
Arrange that?
It can be
I
done.
I guess that it can
You're
be
Jeff
done.
You're Jeff Garland. It should be done.
Yeah, that's what Tony says to me. You're Jeff Garland.
Tony who? Hinchcliffe?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's right.
Yeah, well, I tend to be confident in my comedic skills.
Well, you should be.
Yeah.
You're a funny guy.
Yeah, but outside of that, I'm not lacking in confidence, but leaving my house is, like I said, quite the
But
effort.
That's what I'm saying is, like, by whose definition is enlightenment? Because, like, say if you wanted to go to a concert or you wanted to go to a great movie, would an enlightened person enjoy a great movie?
I would think my version of an enlightened person would, in fact, enjoy a great movie. I've been enlightened at a concert. I saw James Brown when he first got out of prison, and I found that performance that he gave was the most enlightened performance I'd ever seen.
Was this when he was in the car chase? Was that prison?
Yeah, it was the last prison.
He shot at cops because...
I believe so, yeah.
That one was someone else used his bathroom, right? Isn't that what happened? Someone took a shit?
I actually don't know. I know that he got in trouble with the cops. But maybe it was taxes. I don't know.
That's a big difference.
But the point being is that he had gotten out of prison. And just the idea that James Brown was in prison.
I think, maybe I'm remembering this incorrectly, but I think someone used his toilet. And then he got mad at that person and shot at something, like either shot at the wall or something.
I don't remember that story, but I assume that you're looking it up right now.
Yeah, he's looking it up.
Okay, so we'll find
out. I feel like he was in a high-speed chase. They shot his tires out.
I don't remember it this
I'm
way. I remember
sure.
something in a car, though, maybe.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they shot his tires out, and he was driving around on the rims.
He had to have been doing a lot of blow or something to make him that agitated. You know what I mean? No normal human, then again we're talking about James Brown, is that agitated. I mean, who gets that
he
agitated?
He was fucking phenomenal when he was young.
Two-state chase that went up to 85 miles an hour involved 14 cars. He said he didn't stop because he feared for his life, though. I'm trying to see why it started, and I don't see that.
I feel like that's what started. He was he fired off a gun because someone used his toilet.
By the way, a two-state chase. I'm guessing he lived near the border.
He probably lived in one of those wacky states.
He lived in Georgia.
Oh, okay. Well, yes. Maybe it was like Georgia, Florida.
Yeah, it could be.
Right? They're close could to be. Each other. Yeah. Georgia, Florida line. Isn't that a band? It is, right? Doesn't Wheeler Walker make fun of them?
Yeah, it just says he failed to obey to pull over.
That's all it is?
That's what it
but
says.
But I'm pretty sure that's why they were pulling him over. I think they were going after him. I might be wrong about that. Maybe I'm confusing him with, okay, Chuck Berry was the one who was filming people going to the bathroom, right?
I think he liked to go in the he liked to pee on ladies. I'm pretty sure.
Interesting.
I'm pretty sure.
Interesting.
Generally, when I enjoy James Brown's music, I'm not thinking about his car. I'm thinking about his other side. You know.
This does say that your story.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. What does it say?
I was right.
From,
here it goes.
Yeah.
Okay.
He carrying a deadly weapon at a public gathering in an attempt to flee police, driving under the influence of drugs. Okay. He reportedly stormed into the insurance company next to his office, waving a shotgun and complaining that strangers were using his bathroom. As Time reported, that's
he
it.
He drove on the rims for 6 miles.
There you go.
Are you kidding me?
Years later, this episode would frame the 2014 Brown biopic.
Okay, 88.
Get on up.
I'm guessing that I saw him after this.
Uh-huh.
Because after that. It would be late 80s, early 90s.
Jesus Christ, he did 6 years?
Yeah, he was in there for a while.
6 fucking years?
Yeah.
How about just sober him up? He was on PCP.
They gave him a year for each mile he drove on his rims.
Rumors of a PCP habit had already surfaced by the time his erratic behavior came to a head in September. Wow. PCP is a tricky one, huh?
He sang in the prison choir.
I bet he did. Shit, imagine you go to jail for like stealing a car and your fucking cellie is James Brown. You're like, hey, buddy, what do you want to do?
Yeah, that's something. That's a hell of a story.
Yeah, help him write some songs. Mm-hmm. You know, get on up.
Yeah.
Did you ever see when he opened up for the Muhammad Ali fight with George Foreman?
Of course, it's in the documentary.
Holy shit, was that incredible?
That was incredible. Yeah,
incredible.
Yeah,
he had so much power. There was something about him, man. He would get
ridiculous.
On stage. Just power.
Give you an idea how much power Prince wished for that power.
Fuck yeah. Well, Prince had it, but he had it in a different way.
Different way, but Prince looked up to that power.
Oh, like who the fuck didn't?
No, James Brown was ridiculous.
I can't sing and I looked up to it.
Yeah.
I don't have any musical talent.
It
I
just
looked
tells
up to
you
it.
What a waste Elvis was. Because Elvis had that power and he didn't use it. He had it early on and then...
He could never dance like James Brown, though. Or if he did, he never showed it.
But it would be different. It's a different kind of power. If he just took and harnessed what he had.
Here it is. Look at this. Look at his dress, too. Look at the way he's dressed. Look at that. The fucking pants and the shoe. Look at this. Goddamn. Dropping down, doing splits.
I know. No, he was not human.
And by the way, he's not even really flexible enough to do a full split. And yet he's still dropping down on stage.
Do you know he was wearing a turtleneck that night? And I said to him, cut that baby out.
Look
I
at
said,
that.
Let's leave a little bit. Let's put your initials on there.
I think that was done in advance. All the girls he's hanging around with.
Yeah, I know.
Probably fucked
he's
all
James
of them
Brown.
Too. Woo! Yeah, look at his giant-ass band. I don't envy those people. You know when you see people with bands touring? Got all those people, all those working pieces have to fall into place.
Yep.
Look at all that, though.
Yeah.
But goddamn, what a performance. What a performer.
When I saw him, it blew my mind. It literally blew my mind.
Well, what's interesting, too, is that, you know, Prince, who died of painkillers, he died from fentanyl.
Yeah.
He blew his hips out dancing. Like, that was the thing, you know, and that apparently is a very common thing. My friend Maynard Keenan from Tool, the lead singer of Tool, he just recently had his hip replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing, he's big into jiu-jitsu, loves jiu-jitsu. And he was having a really hard time doing certain things, so went to a doctor to see what's going on with his hip. And they're like, dude, your hip is gone, son. Like, it's just deteriorating.
And now is he functioning at a high level?
Yeah. He's
look
fine.
At that. That's great.
The hip replacement is one of the most unusual ones in terms of, like, its ability to restore you back to a fairly normal state other than running.
Being a comedian is delightful.
Yeah, we don't have to do any of that shit.
No.
There's no, get on up. Get on up.
No. And by the way, when you see someone moving around like that on stage, I will bet you every penny I have they're not funny.
Callan moves a lot on stage. He's very funny.
Nah, he doesn't move like
sometimes he throws kicks.
All right, so upstairs in the
belly room?
No, the improv upstairs. Oh, okay. You know that green room thing? Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a monitor on stage with a thing, and I will turn to whoever I'm with and go, funny. Not funny, because I can watch and tell whether the comedy's coming to them or whether they're pushing it. And most of the move-around people are pushing it.
But they're Jim Carrey was a move-around guy. He was always really funny.
But move-around in a different sort of way.
There's doing exceptions. Characters.
Well, there's exceptions to all stuff, like all things. But in this sort of way, I'm talking about when someone just stands there and talks and then they're doing some sort of movement, it's not good. Jim Carrey, there was a purpose.
Right.
Brian, it's part of who he is.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people that just oversell shit by physicalizing what should be just funny the way you say it, not even what you're saying, the way you say it.
Tom Segura calls it dance moves.
It is dance moves. Good night. Tom Segura's right. Tom Segura's funny.
He's a genius. He, I used to call it English, putting like English on a cue ball.
Spin. Yes,
it's cue English. Ball spinning around.
Totally unnecessary.
But dance moves is better. Dance moves is better. So I've adopted dance moves now.
Dance moves is and that's what I'm talking about. So Jim Carrey and Brian Callen do not have dance moves.
Right. They just are funny and they also move.
Yeah, there's a reason for their moving.
But
yeah,
don't know
dance
of any...
moves. Oh, come on, man. And you know what's so funny? Years ago, I remember, anytime I saw someone miming having sex, you know, pumping air, I would just go, not funny.
No.
It was just like, it was a sign of like...
But what if there's a bit where you have to mime pumping air? There's got to be a bit.
Pumping air?
Yeah. But
you mean like
there's gotta be
screwing pumping?
Some bits.
What? But who doesn't know what that looks like? Why do you need to pump?
Maybe there's a reason. It's gotta be something.
Unless, like, you're imitating someone having a heart attack pumping.
Right.
Or you know, if the content is about your physicality,
right.
That's not dancing.
Right, right, right.
Dancing's when you put, like, English, like, when you're doing this to accentuate what you're saying, it's like, screw that. We don't need that.
Well, do you ever go to open mic nights?
I used to do them up until recently.
Really?
I would just show up and say, can I go up and do 10, you know? And and what was really fun was when the person who had them didn't know who I was.
That oh, that's was great.
And then I watched as other people explained. And it was cool because I didn't have an attitude, you know?
Right.
And I would do my sets. And the audiences at open mic nights are really, they're terrible.
A lot of times, yeah.
Yeah, they're there to see their friends or they're tired or whatever.
Or they've been beaten down by totally unfunny shit.
Totally unfunny shit over and over and over again. So, yes, up until about 4 or 5 years ago, I used to go to open mic nights.
What's fascinating about open mic nights is you're watching people try to figure out how to be funny. Like, you're watching people, like, if you go to the store, like, tonight, and you go there. It's going to be a packed house. It's all Chris D'Elia and fucking Andrew Santino and Ali Wong. It's all killers, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're seeing high-level comedy over and over again. And so you get into that vibe and you're like, oh, this is a great place to be. But if you go to an open mic night, you're seeing this like primordial ooze. You're seeing single-celled organisms.
You're seeing things that you really shouldn't be seeing.
Sometimes.
You know, because
every now and then you see a little.
I explain to people, get as much stage when you start, get as much stage time as you can without people seeing you.
That's good too. That's very good advice.
But you need to go on stage over and over and over again. But don't go on stage at any popular places. Go on stage at the suckiest, because you only learn from when you suck.
That's a big part of it for sure. That's one
feels
of the reasons why
kill.
I really admired Charlie Murphy. Because Charlie Murphy was essentially a famous open micer when he started. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he started, he had never done stand-up comedy ever. And then he was just a really funny actor who was the brother of one of the greatest comics of all time, who got on the Chappelle Show and then started doing stand-up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Charlie would just fucking do it. Just go and do it. And, you know, he had some rough sets, too, when he was famous, like really famous.
By the way, you think when I did those things that I didn't eat it? Plenty of times.
Oh, open mic nights?
Yeah.
Everybody eats it there.
But what I had was I was in control of myself.
Yes.
And it didn't fall apart, which if you're an amateur, it would fall apart.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean I did well.
Well, of course.
As a matter of fact, I remember one time Dice came into the store. This is probably 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. And he came up to me, goes, I'll go up after you. You know, it was very respectful, very nice. And I said, no, I really want to follow you. I want to see what that's like. I've never followed you. Please go up there and go for broke. Go for fucking broke. I go, how long are you doing? He goes, well, maybe a half hour. I go, great. Go up there for a half hour. I got nowhere to be. I'm going to watch you. And then I want you just to fucking hold nothing back. And then I went up after him. You know how I did? Fine. Didn't do good. Didn't do bad. Did fine because I knew how to handle myself. My right. professionalism.
Yes.
The craft of what I know won out.
Yeah.
But there's no following that with what I do, which is totally different, and having the audience go, oh, this takes it to a whole new place. No.
Did you ever listen to The Day the Laughter Died?
Yeah, Rick Rubin's album with him. Yeah.
Fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, great album.
And it's just eating shit
for right
2 hours.
2 hours, I know.
He showed up at Dangerfields, for people who don't know. It's literally, I will never forget, I was just starting out. I think he did this, look this up when that was. I want to say it was like 1989, 1990.
No, it was after that.
It was fairly early. It was fairly early because I was very young in my career.
It might have been then.
Because I was still living in Boston.
No, it might have been then because...
89.
Yeah, because I was thinking about me living here now, but it came out the first time I lived here.
Well, I was living in Boston, and I was just starting out, and there was a great comedian named Mike Donovan, who to this day is one of the funniest guys I've ever seen in my life. And Mike Donovan was laughing to the point where he couldn't breathe at Dice doing this set while he was doing fucking stadiums. I mean, Dice was doing enormous Nassau Coliseum. What's in the bowl, bitch? Oh!
Yeah.
20,000 people. Yeah. He was the biggest comedian of all time.
Yeah.
And he just decides to show up at Dangerfields in New York City randomly on like a Monday and a Tuesday night. Doesn't tell anybody he's going to be there. I mean, there's 13, 20 people in the crowd. He records two different sets, and he has no material. I mean, fucking none. He's making things up as he goes along, and people are getting angry at him, and they're walking out, and he did a bit about Richard Nixon, about how he eats ass, and when he eats ass, he does it like Richard Nixon. He was like, oh, I love this fat fucking ass. He was doing this Richard Nixon impression of eating ass. And for whatever reason, Mike Donovan thought it was the funniest thing he'd ever seen in his life. He was wheezing, like couldn't breathe, talking about Dice doing this impression. And I was like, wow. This is like comedy for comedians, but for the people that were in the audience, like a guy got up, he goes, you're about as funny as a glass of milk. The guy said that to him and then left. That's one of the best things on the album. These people from like Kansas get it, you're about as funny as a glass of milk, and walking off and Dice shitting on them. But to have the mindset to be at the, not just the top of his game, but literally the top of stand-up ever. No one before him had ever sold out Madison Square Garden multiple nights in a row the way he did. I mean, guys have done it since then. You know, Dane and Louis, and there's been a bunch of guys, Aziz. But no one did it like he did then. He was the first ever to do that. And to do that, and then to record these fucking awful sets, and then put it out. We're going to fucking put it out.
I guarantee that was Rick Rubin's idea.
You think so?
Oh, without a doubt.
But you know Dice? Dice is like
that. I know
like
Dice
that.
And I know Rick Rubin.
I bet it was both of their ideas.
Well, maybe he didn't fight Rick Rubin. I'll have to ask Rick Rubin next time I see him.
Yeah, ask him.
I never asked him that. But that sounds to me like Rick Rubin going, let's do this.
Interesting. Yeah. But it was such a crazy, bold move. I remember thinking at the time, because I was terrible in 1989 when it came out. I was just like confused. Like, how does one do that? Mm-hmm. Like, one is so confident that they release something that sucks. Because when I was 19, it's me and my girlfriend Marta. Me and Marta were sitting in my car, and I had a cassette player, and we were listening to Dice. It was just called Dice. And crying, laughing. It was before I'd ever done stand-up. And I remember thinking, wow, this guy is fucking something. Like, the amount of power that he had, like, on stage, and these roars from the crowd. And we're sitting in my car laughing our asses off to this cassette. It wasn't even a CD. That a couple years later, he decides, I'm just going to put out something that sucks.
The day the comedy died.
The day the laughter died, yeah. And he's got like one of them fucking paperboy hats on mm-hmm. on the cover.
No, it's black.
A bold man.
The cover's black. And, white. And there's yeah. just a little picture of him on there.
Is that what
I'm
it
mistaken.
Is?
Yeah, a small picture, I think. Or maybe it's a big picture of him.
There it is
I
right there.
I don't remember. Oh, no, it's a big picture.
We should get a... Oh, yeah. So, but it is small in comparison to the yeah. actual CD.
Yeah.
See if we can get... Jamie, let's get a framed copy of that and put it on the wall somewhere.
Was it released as an album? Like on?
I don't know. Yeah, let's get the image.
I guarantee there's vinyl. Guarantee.
Yeah, let's get find it. See if we could buy it in vinyl.
Look on
let's
eBay right it. Now for, yeah. for the day that
they did it again.
He did it again.
Yeah, 3 years later.
Really?
He did the same thing.
It's a part two. Yeah.
I've seen him do that at the store. I've seen him go up late night at the store, like, look at you. Look at you over there. And just start talking mm-hmm. shit to people. Like, mean
dice. Why does
dice
he wear weightlifting
favorite.
Gloves whenever
he doesn't
comes
like
anywhere.
Touching people's hands.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Big Jay Oakerson wears weightlifting gloves in homage.
He to does dice?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. I was trying to get the two of them together on a podcast, but scheduling wise, it never really worked out.
You know,
out.
I'm shaking Dice's hand.
Different photo on the vinyl.
Oh.
It's available for $400 on Amazon.
Oh, buy that shit.
No,
buy that shit. We're going
to
frame
$400. I'll go to Dice.
He might not have it.
Yeah, I guarantee he's got it.
Hey. Yeah.
You pay for lunch, I'll give you the album.
Have you ever seen his Instagram? You ever go to Dice's Instagram?
No.
It's hilarious. It's just so random. It's like an older, rich, famous guy who does whatever the fuck he wants.
I'm supposed to have had coffee or lunch with him a million times. I never have.
It's one of those things. Yeah.
Well, no, it just it never happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he his
nice
Instagram
gentleman.
Is him like with a gold gym T-shirt on, with crazy sunglasses, and he'll do like these little sketches, but they're so random and weird. Like him talking to a girl, like maybe we should do something later, and the girl's like, okay, like click on this, play this. This is like his. This is his whole thing.
You like skateboarding? I was thinking about it.
Skateboarding, yeah.
Yeah, maybe we should do that.
It'll be a good time.
Can you cook dinner for her is the question.
Why don't you stay out of this one?
He doesn't even know how to use the phone.
What's your name?
Nicole.
What?
Nicole.
All right, I'll call you. I got to go take care of something.
All right.
What's this? Oh, at the end of it, afterwards, he goes, he's got another one, a follow-up, where he gets mad at himself for not doing anything about it. Like, go to the next video. That's not it. There's another. There, play this one.
What a beautiful night, huh? Beautiful. That's it.
It's Eleanor.
What a beautiful night, huh?
That's what's her. She's
so
a comedian,
random.
Right?
Eleanor Kerrigan, yeah.
Yeah.
They're so random. The videos are so, I guess the text in that video was like, I should have done something. What's wrong with me?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's, but this is him. Why did I leave? I'm so dumb. But they're so random. It's like, what is he doing? He's just
being Dice.
He's just being. He used to do that at the store. He used to have comics do these little sketches. He's like, okay, you're gonna run through the door there, and you're gonna knock him over, and you're gonna go, what the fuck? Okay, go. And the guy would do it. He'd run into the door and knock the other guy over, and he'd go, what the fuck? Go, perfect. Do it again. And he would just film this with like VHS tape, you know, like an old school one.
Oh, really?
And then he would edit it together himself. But he did nothing with it. And this was like, Dice was giant, just fucking top of the world giant. And this is what he's doing to amuse himself.
But
he
I love the comics. Fact that the comics would just do it.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You're just so happy Dice is talking to you.
Yeah.
He's the reason why I started doing the road. Mm-hmm. I would just do the store all the time. I was constantly at the store. One time we're in the back, he goes, hey, you're funny. You know, you should do the road. I go, yeah? He goes, yeah. He goes, you don't want to rely on these fucking assholes for money. He goes, you can fucking do whatever you want. Go do the road. I was like, yeah, why don't I do the road? Because I was just doing TV shows. And then, you know, you're doing TV shows, you're kind of trapped in this. This is how you make your living. You got to kind of always be acting and always be going on auditions. I was like, yeah, because I wasn't making, you don't make real money at the store. You make like $15 a set or whatever you make, you know?
One year I never collected a check, and then they never had them again.
At the store?
Yeah, I'm guessing with the number of sets I did, probably about $2,500, $5,000.
Probably donated back to the club.
Yeah, donated back to the club. Yeah. It's not donated to any charity on behalf of the store.
Yeah, no, not a charity. You're donating to the charity of the store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I don't care either.
Yeah.
It's a good donation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a place is a fascinating place. Really, I was gone for 7 years, and, you know, I've been back for four now, and it's it is just a...
I love the original room.
Oh, it's incredible.
That's the room that's got it going.
The main... Well, I left all three.
I don't.
They're all different.
The belly room's okay, and the main room... By the way, the main room, performing in the main room does not bother me. I hate the green room.
Really?
Hate it.
Why?
The cocaine piano in the middle of the room. And
it's the best piano.
Yeah.
The fake piano.
But the
piano.
Point being is most of those people I don't want to see.
Oh, hanging around back there?
Yeah, they just hear it.
I know what you mean.
There's such a negative vibe.
Really?
I think that there's a lot of comedians that play there that are a big bowl of dead weight.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
But there's a lot
name
of
any names.
But there's a lot that are joyful and great, and I dig, and I like watching. And my favorite thing to do is laugh at my fellow comedians. But on the flip side, some people just, man, their presence just depresses me.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't feel that.
Okay.
Maybe do an impression of
no.
Who, like, just mime it. No.
But some really, I think, yeah. Because, you know, the thing when I started in comedy, which is 82, working through, comedians really were a group that stuck together.
You don't think that's the case now?
No. I think
interesting.
I think for the past, I think it started changing in late 90s, 2000s, to where it was every man for himself. And a lot of people, it wasn't like you're part of this fraternity. It was like, fuck you, I'm going to do this, you know. My thing with competition is, go do your thing. If the audience digs you more, great. If I'm auditioning and you're auditioning, go beat me in the room. Mm-hmm. I don't give a crap. But there's such a competitiveness. And I know that's part of why Eddie doesn't do spots. Because
Eddie Murphy,
because when I work with him, I would say, why don't you go? He'd say the looks that I get and the vibe that I get from comics, it's not pleasant. And I go, I knew exactly what he was talking about.
That's so weird. I have the exact opposite feeling about comedy now and about, it's particularly like the store and like the camaraderie of that place.
I don't get it. By the way, I dig a lot of people there. But the people who I dig know I dig them.
Right.
And the other ones who I don't dig don't know anything. It's not like I spend time
right,
being
of
negative.
Course. Yeah.
But there's lots of guys and gals that are great, but also plenty of them that, like, please step away.
I was having a conversation about this with a friend of mine recently who was living for a while in a place that he hated. And he was saying that if you're in a place where everyone's negative, you really kind of forget that people can be positive.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
So why should I leave the Comedy Store and at least half of the times I play there, leaving there, driving home, feeling like not positive?
That's so weird.
Whereas, you know, by the way, I sometimes now arrange it. The only set that I do at the Comedy Store now is I sometimes will close the 7 o'clock original room show. Because there's no one after me, so if I'm 5 minutes long, no one's giving a crap.
Right.
And they've already seen the whole show. And I can do that, zip in, do it, and get the hell out. I'll do a benefit in the main room, or like I did Tony's show.
Right.
Kill Tony.
Yeah, we're going to bring you into the fold, Jeff Garlin.
By the way, I know the nice people. I have nice conversations with them, but the other people are always there hovering.
The hoverers.
I don't like a hoverer.
No. Hoverers.
Stop hovering.
That is brutal when you're having a good conversation.
By the way, if you're not into a groove, if your groove is not about making people laugh, like, I don't care whether you're political, social, how you do your comedy. But if your ultimate goal isn't to bring joy into people's lives, what's the purpose?
Right.
If it's not about the laughs and joy.
Right.
And so I find, here's the thing I don't dig, a lot of ego running around the store when I'm there. And most of the people I don't like have the biggest egos.
Do you think that they're threatened by you? Because you're a very accomplished guy, so maybe that's why you're getting that weird vibe from people?
I've been told that before. But if I thought that, that would be weird. So I don't. I don't pay attention
maybe,
to that.
Well, that's because you're a
you know. There's a great
guy.
Line. I'm not an alcoholic, but I do know this line from the program, which is, "What you think of me is none of my business," which I love.
That's a great perspective.
Great perspective. So, what they think of me is none of my business. I just know what they're putting out there.
Mm.
That's all.
Yeah, I think sometimes people will look at you and go, "Well, here's a guy who's been on." I mean, some of the all-time greatest television shows ever. You know, you're a guy that's got a massive, like, your resume, your accomplishments mm-hmm. as a comic and performer.
Yes.
It's very enviable. So maybe perhaps they see but you
I'm,
like,
I
like,
look
this
at
guy's
myself
in.
As a generous guy on every level. I like being generous, and I like helping comics, you know, sticking my hand out, doing what I can to help. So I don't feel that I put anything that they should be fearful of out.
No, but I think it's their own issue. I mean, I remember when I was starting out, I would get real uncomfortable when I was around really famous people. I'd be like, wow, it feels weird to be around this guy in real life.
I get that. That can be.
But when you and I met, you've always been very, very friendly.
Well, that's what I want to be. I like to be a warm, thoughtful person who most of the time prefers to stay at home.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to go out, if I'm going to go to the farmer's market, if I'm going to go to the comedy store, I'm prepared to talk to people, take pictures of people, be warm to people, engage with people. Because if I don't want that, I stay home.
Right.
And so if I'm in a negative, bad mood, I really will go do my set and get out. But that doesn't happen very often. But I'll stay home.
Yeah, that's why you need that downtime, right?
Yeah.
Because you got to be able to recharge.
Got to be able to recharge.
Yeah.
So, and I used to not allow myself that. I used to work so hard.
I was reading this article yesterday about Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And about Tom Cruise's life being very strange. Jesus Christ, Jeff Garland. What is going on with your phone? What is that?
It's my brother.
Ringer. What is that?
It's a theme to A Man and a Woman. Ba da 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 da. Do, do, do,
I don't even know what A Man and a Woman is.
It's a French movie.
Jesus Christ.
But hold on a second here.
How am I supposed to know that?
But I actually sing that with, you know, Jeff, who plays piano in the original.
Yes, Jeff Richard.
Not Jeff Richard.
Jeff Scott.
He and I.
Why Jeff Richard?
He'll start. I'll look at him and I'll go, "I'm not singing tonight." And the audience, most of them, goes, "Oh, as if I'm known for singing," which I make fun of them.
You're Barry
Diamond. Then in the middle of the show, I'll just look at him and go, "Jean Céline, and I sing. And then when I'm done, I tell the audience that I'm in a very accomplished at French gibberish, which is what it is.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a great song.
So do you have custom ringtones for when different people call you?
No, I just have a
That's the one? Minimum.
And generally my ringer's off, which is off now. Last thing I was listening to is Buddy Guy.
Ah.
The blues is alive and well. Buddy Guy's newest album. He's, I think, about to turn 82. I'm going to go to Chicago for his birthday.
He just put out a new album and he's 82?
And it's a badass album.
Of course it is.
Oh, he rips it, the whole album. He's amazing.
Of course he does.
But that inspires me to still... By the way... Everything about aging is about relevancy. How are you contributing?
Right. Like George Carlin. No one cared that George Carlin was...
Doesn't matter.
75 or whatever he was.
Doesn't matter. He's relevant. He's contributing.
Still Carlin.
That's what I aspire to.
Mm.
Relevancy. To contribute to mankind, to my art, to everything.
Yeah.
So I'll never be like, you know, if someone says, "Who's that old dude?" and I'm not doing anything based on what I'm aspiring to do... That's their issue.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I will be, to my best ability, relevant.
That's an interesting perspective because it's really true, but it's something that people don't think about. You know, it's like rock stars in particular. Like, no one looks at Mick Jagger and go, "Why is that guy still doing it?" Because when you watch him do it, you're like, "Oh, Jesus, he's still doing it. He's like, button your lip.
Yes,
baby.
Watching him live is ridiculous. And by the way, he really moves, no kidding around, like at the oldest 30.
No, he moves phenomenal.
It's ridiculous. And he's 71?
70-something, still shooting loads into hot models. He had a baby recently.
That's my stage name, by the way.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah. That's my band. How do you have that stage name and that's my band's name?
I didn't license it, though, so I'll give it back to you. My apologies.
Bruce Springsteen's another one. Springsteen's in his 60s.
By the way, I saw
phenomenal.
That show. I saw that show.
Yeah?
And my jaw was on the floor. I could not believe that
His
show.
Broadway show?
His Broadway show. It was one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
74, he turns tomorrow.
Yeah, 75 tomorrow. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. And he works out, I believe, twice a day, every day.
Does he really?
He does yoga and he trains with weights and all. See if you can find Mick Jagger shirtless as
an
old man.
I'm sure there's a ton.
Yeah, but I mean, like recent, right?
Well, now go to tools. Go to tools to the right. And then go to, time. Yeah, there we go.
That's the old picture.
I know. No,
yeah. Say, right, recent. See if you can find a recent one. There's a lot of pictures of him with his clothes off. Jesus Christ, Mick. Put a fucking shirt on. Huh?
Yeah.
Are you a hot model?
Yeah, he's an interesting man. But that's why I say to you, there's always exceptions.
There, far right. What do you got there?
Is that him? That's a model.
Oh. Well, that's not Mick Jagger, you son of a bitch.
That's him at 40 with the beard. I know that for sure. So that's the oldest one I've seen.
Mm, okay. Well, either way, the guy he's
ridiculous.
Crazy.
But his movements are what's amazing. His voice has not, I think it's still amazing. And the way he moves, it's so fluid. It's so beautiful.
He does a lot of yoga, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Google his workout. Mick Jagger's workout, because he's incredibly disciplined, apparently.
And then look up Barnaby Jones reunion.
Ooh.
Just out of curiosity.
Is that coming? Look at him. Look at that. Right there. Takes up yoga at 73. There you go.
Oh, is that what he did?
Yeah.
It takes up aerial yoga. I guess you're doing it on the ground didn't work for him enough anymore.
Yeah, not enough.
He needed to take it to a new level. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Incredible. Mick Jagger diet and exercise program.
Live long,
stay young.
What if he only eats peppers?
I was just in Thailand, and when you go to the bathroom, right by the toilet, they literally have one of those garden hoses that you would wash a car with. They don't even play with bidets. Because with those peppers, when you're eating that Thai food, like this kind of splatter that you're creating, they're like, let's just be honest. Toilet paper is not good enough. You're going to need a hose down, son.
But wait, wouldn't it be funny if there's a guy waiting outside the bathroom to explain that to you? You just walk out and he says to you, you're probably a little confused, but toilet paper's
they're like not explaining nothing there. There's something I put up on my Instagram today about a sign that I saw that said, please don't pee on the floor. And I'm like, how many people have to pee on the floor before you have to put a sign up that says, please don't pee on the floor?
And by the way, if you're a person who pees on the floor, are you really going to go, I was going to, but now I'm not at all. I'm stopping the floor peeing.
Exactly. It's like, please don't rape.
By the way, the truth is about floor peeing, pee ends up on the floor.
Some does.
Yeah, some does. Yeah,
for dudes.
Yeah, for dudes.
Another thing I read that's very honest that I read that I agree with, some guy said because of smartphones, I pee sitting down much more than I would like to admit.
Oh,
that's a fact.
We did an episode about that on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, because you sit down and you're like, I'll just take a shit, and if it doesn't come out, I'll just pee and I'll read my phone.
Yeah,
I'll just read stuff.
Yeah.
You guess.
No, look, people with their phones, that's a whole thing.
You got a problem with phones?
As a tool, no, I do not. But as a avoiding being in the present, I do.
Yeah, they're addictive.
They're very addictive. And by the way, I got to be honest, I don't remember the last show where somebody didn't pull out their phone.
The last show? Like when
people are texting,
stand-up?
Someone is, even if it's one person.
Right.
I can't even remember somebody not doing that. And that's that's so disrespectful.
Well, one of the things I did before my last Netflix special that I filmed in April was I went on tour for 3 months where you had to use those cell phone bags.
Oh, you did those?
Those Yonder bags. Yeah. They're a giant fucking pain in the ass.
By the way, I play a lot at Largo, and I would just make an announcement, and then if someone does, you kick them out.
No, I mean, some people just feel like, but I got to just answer this text. But I just got to do this. But I'm a big fan. I'm going to take a picture.
But my response is, but I'll see you later.
Yeah, there's an issue. Say is that it's a big pain in the ass, those Yonder bags, but the show was like 10% better. Because no one had their phone, and you'd sit there, and you would actually be connected to the show.
But people are like, but what if I got a fucking plan later? What if I got a this? What if I got a text coming in? What's that character's name?
I don't have one.
You don't have a name for the character?
Doug.
Oh, okay.
No, but I don't. That's Stanhope.
Toby.
No,
Toby.
Okay,
that's Toby.
This is Toby.
Toby,
what if I got a call coming in?
Yeah, hey,
bro,
Toby.
I got to leave the show to answer the phone.
Toby, which of your Pirates Caribbean movie is your favorite?
All of them. I'm a fucking huge Johnny Depp fan.
One of the reasons why I did that because Chappelle was telling me how much he enjoys it, and Hannibal Buress was telling me how much he enjoys using those bags too. But another reason was this woman complained that when she went to my New Year's show, that some girl behind her made two separate phone calls and was saying Happy New Year to people during the show. During the show, she's like, this stupid fucking bitch was making phone calls while the show was going on.
By the way, I've been behind, in front of, next to that person.
That's a crazy thing to do to me. You're at a performance, a live performance, and you're calling people and talking to them, or even answering the phone and talking on the phone.
But I think if you have signs with a stern language saying you'll be... No,
it's like peeing on the floor, bro.
No, but I got to be honest with you. I really respect my audience, and I really think that that would eliminate the handful of people that would be douchey.
Yeah.
I think most, because I play at Largo a lot, and at Largo, they make the announcement, and I have never seen anyone during my show pull
Largo's
out this
exceptional. Own. That's an exceptional place.
Yeah, but you can create an exceptional vibe in your audience by respecting them.
I certainly agree.
It's like you know, when I go someplace and they want to put a stamp on my hands, I just go, no. No. There'll be no stamps on my hands. And you know what the doorman usually says?
What?
Okay.
Really?
Yeah. So they do not I don't really drink alcohol. So, like, if I go to the bar and order a drink, the guy's going to look for my stamp.
Mm.
Point being is, fuck all that. I got to have respect for people.
What if you go to, like, a musical festival and they want to put a wristband on
It's like
on
also
you.
When you go to the bathroom and they have the sinks. I don't mind the sinks where it senses your hand, even though it doesn't always do it. But, man, those ones where you push down and you get 10 seconds, that's so disrespectful. It's wrong.
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 Really?
Wrong to mankind.
You know what bothers me?
What's
that? When you wave your hand on a thing and it gives you a tiny little strip of paper.
Yeah.
Boop.
Yeah.
A little stingy-ass piece of paper to dry your hand
you
with.
Wave it a second time.
Give me a real fucking piece of paper,
bitch. You know what's
bitch?
Great? Those powerful new blow ones?
No, those are no good.
I dig them.
There was an article that I tweeted about those things.
What is
it? The problem is there's like shit dust in the air from all right, people and all the bacteria.
Wait, by the way, let me ask you the premise of the shit dust thing there. So you're saying people take a dump, wash their ass, wait!
Yes.
And then don't go to the sink to wash their hands. They just go straight for the dryer thing because it's fun and let's spread the shit around.
The thing is, with that, when you hit that dryer, the dust from that, the wind,
all right, stop,
it kicks
stop,
up.
Stop,
this
stop.
Is science.
Okay, enjoy
this
it.
The scientists.
Enjoy this. Too much for me to think about. Too much for me to think
Listen,
about.
Listen, man, I did no research. I just posted an article that I read
okay,
that said that those things are super
really,
unhygienic.
And then somebody goes, hey, if Joe posted it, it must be true because he did his research.
Could be very clickbaity, right? They could have just got you.
Yes, yeah.
Some bullshit. If
some bullshit.
Yeah.
Some guy named Bob who's a doctor. I'm telling you, there's shit in there. That's my character of Bob who's an angry doctor. There's shit in there. Am I right, Toby?
Shit dust.
Yeah. I was on the phone. You know, I didn't have time. I didn't have time to wash my hands.
Hand dryers suck in fecal bacteria and blow it all over your hands. Study fine. See? Bro.
All right, there you go. Enjoy. So I will not be using that anymore. I will use the blow dryer. And when I touch the thing to have the towel come down, I know that that's very clean.
Yes.
No.
No?
No, that's not
clean. But at least it's not blowing fecal
dust. Let's just put it this way. There's no winning.
No winning.
No, but you gotta take a dump in public. There's no winning.
Well, there's also the issue of like becoming some OCD person who's fucking completely crazy, squirts Purell all over their body everywhere they go because they're afraid of everything they touch.
And then they don't build up immunity.
I have a giant issue with that.
I've worked with many people who in auditions won't shake an actor's hand because they've got
Do you friends with Howie?
Yes, I know that Howie doesn't touch.
He doesn't even bang knuckles anymore. He was banging knuckles for a while.
Oh,
he won't even do knuckles anymore.
Oh, that's
He's gotten
business.
Worse.
That's his business. He's a good man.
He's a very good man.
Yeah,
I really like that guy a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
But I want to hug him. I want to go, come here, motherfucker. Give me a hug. Give me a kiss right on the lips.
You want to make out with him? Yeah, that's so funny.
No! Yeah, I just imagine him running to the emergency room.
He's such a nice man. He's a good man.
He's a very good guy, but I want him to get over that because I think it's insane.
It's not going
to
happen.
Why not?
You think people haven't worked with him on it?
It doesn't make any sense.
You have to want to change, Joe.
Ooh, look at you.
You have
you
to
sound
want,
like your own psychiatrist.
If you don't want to change, you're not going to change.
That's true.
And that's with addiction, with anything. If you don't want to do it, nobody...
True.
By the way, when it comes to addiction or behavior like Howie's, logic does not enter the
You're
room.
Right. Yeah.
You can present your logical cases to all those different types of people. Doesn't matter. They got to want to.
Yeah. Well, he goes so far as that he puts down a trail of paper towels in his hotel room so that he never has to stand on the carpet.
See, I did not know this. I don't want to know this. I don't want to think about Howie in hotels.
Sorry.
I want him to be happy in hotels.
Well, I'm sure he's happy once he steps on that paper towel.
You know what special I loved as a kid?
What?
Howie from Maui.
Oh, yeah.
It was hilarious. He told me, I told him this the other night, he goes, that was shit. And I go, no, I laughed really hard at that special.
Well, it's because he's very funny that he's self-critical. Every funny person I've ever known thinks their act
sucks. I
find
the best response is just thank you.
Yeah, that's a good response. Thanks. I'm glad you enjoyed
it. Thank you.
Glad
and then if
it.
I feel that way, like when people come up to me and they go, you're my favorite character on Curb Your Enthusiasm, what I could really do is look them in the eye and go, really? Really? The guy who does all the exposition? Larry David's not your favorite? I think you're wrong. By the way, every blue moon, when somebody says that to me, I can tell that they mean it. But all of them wouldn't know the difference because I say thank you to all of them. No one needs to hear that shit.
People do say stupid shit that they don't really mean just because they want you to respond to them.
Yeah.
They want to tell you you're the best.
Well, fame is weird.
Yeah.
I learned that when I was at this is 100% true, and I had this moment where fame became clear to me. I found myself waiting at valet parking with Tony Danza.
Whoa.
And it wasn't like we were even looking at each other or we had an awkward moment together. I really wanted to say hello. And not because I'm a big Tony Danza fan or any reason. It was just the fame factor wanted me to talk to Tony Danza.
Of course.
Not even like, hey, Tony, I'm Jeff Garland.
Right.
Just, hey, Tony Danza. How, hey.
Right.
And so I thought, ah, this is fucked up. Shut up. I didn't say anything.
He seems very approachable.
He seems like a very nice fella. But that is not,
When I was a young man, I always wished that I was as nice as Tony Danza. Because when I used to see Tony Danza on Taxi and all those shows, I'm like, he always seems so friendly. Like, why can't I be nice and friendly?
Right. Wouldn't it be weird if, as you got into show business, you found out he was a prick? But the truth is, I've never heard a bad thing ever said about him.
There was a fist fight with him at the Comedy Store one night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Long, long time ago. I want to say, it was before my time, and I started there in 94.
Mm-hmm.
So someone said something stupid to him somewhere back in the day, and Tony Danza was a professional boxer. Really good boxer.
Yeah.
He actually took a pro fight in between tapings of Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Or Taxi, rather. When he was first season, in between first and second season, he was off for a few months. He's like, fuck, I'll have a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, what am I doing? I'm a fucking actor now.
Yeah, he is.
And but somebody got mouthy with him.
Well, by the way, when you see someone like that get into a fight, you know whoever approached him really. There have been times where I felt like it's just not worth it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Because you lose.
Well, that's the other
famous
reaction,
person,
right?
You lose. I don't care if someone calls you a Nazi, a kike, any bad word. Just move along.
That's the other reaction, right? Like there's some people that would come up to you, Jeff Garland, hey, how are you? The other people are like, oh, you fucking think you're all funny because you're on Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I've gotten that maybe once every 2-3 years, but you're really continuing the character.
What is this?
No, but
same guy?
Was that Toby? No, it's not Toby.
Toby's
angry.
Toby's brother's an asshole.
Yeah, Jimbo.
He's on meth.
Jimbo's on meth. So sad. No, but I just avoid, I don't get into it. You know, what you think of me is none of my business. That includes fame.
Right.
So people come up and say things. Thank you. That's the right thing to say.
Yeah.
And then you want to say to them sometimes, and you know this one, could you move along? Because they just stay there. They just stay there, and it's really awkward. There was a dude at the Comedy Store scared the hell out of me because he told me how much I meant to him, and then he didn't leave, and then he was telling me personal things about him that were not – I'm not going to repeat them because I don't want to let him know that I'm talking to him. But he started telling me things. I go, wow, you're really a scary individual. And I never have said the words move along, but I actually – moved along into an area he couldn't enter. I don't remember if it was behind the rope, by the cars, or in the bar, something to get away. And he still tried, It was scary.
Yeah, people get crazy. You know, what bothers me sometimes is you'll be in the middle of a serious conversation with someone. They're telling you something, really intimate, and someone will come over, hey, man, hey, and you're like, but Tony's just telling me he's suicidal.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of a conversation with someone.
No, but that's the thing about...
Ready to jump in front of a bus, and you don't give a fuck.
No, it's a big bowl of wrong.
Yeah.
It's just, because really, just be respectful and kind. Anyone who comes up to me is respectful and kind, I'm kind to. Anyone comes up to me as an asshole, I'm kind to.
I don't even think they notice that they're being an asshole. They just don't know what to do.
They don't know because they are. Either you're an asshole or you're not. Either you're enlightened or you're not.
But there's also, you have a couple of drinks and you don't know what to say.
Well, alcohol.
And you just feel awkward.
By the way, what's the number one rule with someone who's drunk too much?
What?
Telling them that they're drunk.
That's good, too.
You know, saying,
hey, man, you're drunk.
Yeah, hey, man, I don't really talk to drunk people.
I'm not drunk.
Oh. Always, it's the only go-to.
Yeah.
There's no other go-to in that situation.
I can drive.
I can do it, yeah. And so, because whatever it does, it really plows into your ego.
Yeah.
And so, I just make the quickest connection and get out.
Yeah, that's a good move.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
But I'm appreciative. When people come up to me, I'm appreciative. And I treat them the way if someone I dug, especially a comedian, if I told them I dug them, I'd treat the people the way. And the warmer and the more interesting the person is, the more I give them of myself.
How does Larry David handle it?
He's not bad.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm a big fan. Oh, thank you. You know, how about that?
That's a good impression.
Yeah, thanks. I've seen him go through because I saw him become famous. You know, he was on Fridays.
Yeah.
He created Seinfeld, but that still wasn't the fame that he has now. So I saw him through Curb Your Enthusiasm become truly iconic. So he's had trouble figuring out how to. People want to take a picture. People, you know, well, how do I do it? And it's always changing. He's never an asshole.
It's truly one of the greatest comedy shows of all time.
Well, thank you.
100%.
And I have to say, the new season we're about to film in October, the storyline may be my favorite. And it's really subtle and fun. It's like one of those things like, I think people watching it will feel that they're living a fantasy. And after the first one airs, I'm happy to come back and talk about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that premise of where we're going is delightful.
I love how HBO gives him sort of carte blanche. They're like, you know, take a couple years off. Do whatever the fuck you want. Like,
yeah, takes
him
pretty great.
Yeah.
Well, for Larry, it's not about the money.
Right, of course.
It's about, can I do another good show?
Right.
And that makes us different than most shows in history.
Yeah.
And he only wants to do good work and enjoy himself. Otherwise, there's no reason.
Yeah.
And HBO is smart that way.
They're genius. You know? Think about the show, Sopranos, fucking Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
how to let a show just be a show.
From what I understand, they give a lot of notes on their pilots, but once you become a series, they kind of leave you alone.
That's amazing.
You know, whereas when you're doing a network show or from other pay sources, I've heard that the notes never stop.
Well, when I was on news radio,
is the easiest thing to ruin with notes. Drama can survive notes. Comedy cannot because it's like the you know, doing comedy is like, you know, the dominoes, and if you take one of those and just move it a little to the left or the right, you're screwing up the whole thing.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
When I was on news radio, we weren't successful, and that is when you get the notes. So my friend Lou Morton, who is one of the writers, he would wear a shirt every Monday after the ratings would come in with a number on it. He would take a white t-shirt and write it. And one day he came in and the number said 88. I go, fuck, dude, really? He goes, yeah, we're 88th. I'm like, fuck. I was like, god damn it, I better save money.
That was for 3 years, right?
Five.
5 years.
Yeah.
So the point being is that was an immensely successful show.
Barely. Barely made it.
If you stay on the air, that's pretty great.
No, for sure. I mean, it's definitely better than being canceled. But the point being is that we were never a hit. So we always got notes. Mm. We're constantly getting notes. Like, we need a gay neighbor. We need a black guy. We need a this. We need a that. We need a love interest. We need a fucking...
I'd watch that show, by the way, The Gay Neighbor and the Black Guy. If that was the name of the show, I'd be in.
That's probably a good name of a sitcom.
Yeah,
the gay neighbor
black
and the black
guy lives next to a gay neighbor, and it's the problems they
There's a lot of sitcoms, and I don't want to name names, but I watch them, and I know they're very, very, very successful. And I watch them, and I'm stunned. I don't understand it. It's like they're speaking a different language.
I don't get it either. I don't. But I don't watch comedy, man.
But I think it's middle America. I think there's something going on with tired people.
No, you know what it is? Here's something that I noticed. This is something that's recent, too. That audiences now respond to what they think is supposed to be funny. Like, real comedy fans dug news radio. Like, people who dug comedy, I think, dug news radio. People who dig comedy dig Curb. Do we have other kind of fans, too? Yes. But I find that comedy fans really do get comedy.
Right.
But everybody likes to say they like comedy or they watch comedy, and they may not have any sense of humor.
Right.
So I find there was a show. I'll give you an example. And this one was, like, the specific, and I don't care if I'm slamming it. It was the something in the girl in the apartment B or the bitch in something B. It was lead actress, very talented. But I watched the show, and the rhythms were, this is what comedy is. It wasn't funny. It didn't have a natural vibe to it. It had no reason for me to keep watching it. But it was done in a style that other shows have done since, where this is how comedy's done. This is the way we spin a line or do a situation. And I don't know why, but it always involves a lot of that putting the spin on the ball, or what do you say, dancing in English.
Yeah, dance moves.
It has a lot to do with it. Because even if you watch a lot of Nickelodeon shows or Disney shows, they tend to do that. They put the spin on it. It's never funny enough. Just to have – here's the thing about comedy, TV comedy, I think for the most part. You're supposed to be enthralled with the situation.
Right.
So the situation – Lucy got into a situation.
Yes.
And you laughed at Lucy dealing with the situation. I bet in the entire time Lucy ran on the air that there might have been 12 great jokes that she said – in the situation. You're laughing on how she deals with the situation.
That's a very good point.
And you look at any great comedy, and that's what it is. It's Larry David dealing with a situation.
Yes.
And by the way, one thing Larry and I are very proud about with Curb Your Enthusiasm, if one of us says something funny to the other one because we improvise, we laugh. So these shows, you see,
right,
people say these lines written by writers, and then the audience laughs if it's on stage. But yet the actors don't laugh at one another.
Right.
That's wrong.
Right. It doesn't make any sense.
So on a lot of levels, it's just not right. And then there are shows now that I've watched for maybe 5 minutes where I cannot believe how terrible they are.
Yeah.
And yet they're successful.
Hugely successful.
Hugely successful. Don't get it.
Yeah. When you guys do a show, you don't really have, like, a full script in terms of
We have a very tight outline. We have 7 pages written.
Outline.
Larry has written the story.
Right.
And in that story, maybe a half dozen things are, like, he says this or she says that.
Because you have to move the story along.
Yeah, it's for story purposes, not because it's a great joke.
Right.
And then I play it every time differently. Unless I'm told by the director or I'm one of the producers, we have a meeting of, like, we need to get this across. This is not coming across, and I'll make an adjustment.
Right.
But in general, I try and do it different every single take.
That is so crazy. And how many takes will you do?
Well, if it's Larry and I, just us, he and I alone in the scene, we can have a scene done in less than an hour. But if there's a bunch of other people, could be 3 hours.
Wow. And the idea is just, like, this is what needs to take place. We have to figure out how to get across the fact that the refrigerator's broken and we're going to have to go buy ice. And who's going to buy the ice? I don't want to drive to buy the ice.
Right.
And then you're all just talking.
It's more in depth than that. The story is really there.
Right.
But yes, how we approach it, and sometimes that can change things.
But that's one of the reasons why the show is so good, because it seems so organic when you guys are talking.
It is. Well, that's what I get out of it. We don't rehearse.
That's amazing.
Zero
too.
Rehearsal. The Goldbergs, we don't even do a lot of rehearsing, but I have to stick to the script. If I want to improvise on the Goldbergs, I have to let the producers know, not to get permission, to let them know this take, I'm going to do something different. And I have to let my fellow actors know.
Ah, that's interesting.
Is it hard for you to adjust
to go from 2 different styles?
I don't know that it's difficult, but I find the Curb Your Enthusiasm way more enjoyable.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I'm really proud. The Goldbergs is the number one show on TV that families watch together. So I'm very proud of that, and I get why people dig it. It's not my style, but when I watch it occasionally, I don't watch it very often, I get why people dig it. I'm not confused by the show.
Right.
You know
what
I mean? Yeah. Like these other shows we're talking about, I'll be confused as to why they're successful, why they're on the air. But other ones I watch, like I watch Modern Family, I get why people dig it.
Right.
It makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
You know? So it's much more enjoyable during the curb thing. It's edgier and all that. But I still dig the Goldbergs. And I also dig the crew. And I dig the people I work with. And I dig the writers. So it's a very positive, wonderful experience. And I'm lucky. I'm on one of the most popular network comedies. And I'm on the most popular alternative comedy.
How'd you get to be so lucky?
By the way, I'm grateful. I keep on getting told in therapy, don't say lucky so much.
Why does he tell you that?
Because grateful. Because I do have something to do with it, but not from an ego standpoint.
Right.
Like, I've worked hard. I've done this. I've done that.
Yeah.
So I'm just incredibly grateful.
You're lucky, too.
I think I'm lucky,
yeah,
too.
You're lucky, too. You're grateful.
And by the way, what if I told you? I'm not kidding. That dude has taught me so much. That might be the only thing I disagree with him on.
Yeah, he doesn't know shit.
No, lucky is good. You know, Roger Daltrey always said, be lucky. Mm. And it's because that means no matter how great you are, no matter how much you have to do with this or that, if you look at it that you're lucky, being humble is a big bowl of delightful.
Yeah.
The combination of being confident and being humble, you can't beat that.
But being aware that, you know, you could be born in Ethiopia. You could have been
born in
the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
could have been fucked.
I'm not big on ego. Ego screws me. And by the way, I was ignorant enough at one time to think I could eliminate my ego. You can't. You just got to recognize it when it pops up.
Recognize it and keep it under control.
Well, just say, hey, man, don't need you.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know, sometimes I'll get asked to do something. And as I'm thinking about it, well, am I saying yes to this out of an ego move?
Mm.
You know?
Oh, I've definitely done that before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's... Well, one of the main reasons why I exercise so much is to try to keep my body in balance, not in terms of like the way it looks, but so it doesn't get in the way. And I think that
if your body's in balance, then that helps your mind.
Oh yeah,
and that helps your soul.
Oh, for
it's
sure.
It's not a vanity thing, man.
No,
that's a
but
thing.
It is too. I definitely like looking good.
Well,
but it's
but
also.
But that I think that's more of a. Respecting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's a self-respect thing to me.
There's definitely that. But I think having
and you
it so
actually
your
dig
not...
it, which is weird.
Why is it weird?
Because that's not something that most people generally love. They hate going to the gym, but they go. You feel at your best when you're exercising. That is amazing. That is awesome. I wish I could have that for a week. Just let me borrow it for a week.
Just
I'd always rather nap. Than do anything.
I don't mind
I'd
napping.
Stand up, I like over napping, sex over napping, sometimes eating, not as much anymore. It's not a big thing for me anymore. So I'd say sex and stand up and spending time with my boys. That takes precedence over it. My boys are 18 and 22. I'm madly in love with them. And so that takes precedence. I'd rather be with them than nap.
Yeah.
By the way, when they were little, taking a nap with them, I was in heaven.
Yeah.
Because I knew they were good.
Yeah.
And they'd be laying against me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Good night, nurse.
Yeah. That's the pleasure of having children. I don't know. Like having these people that you love more than you could ever have imagined loving someone.
More than, by the way, that's the thing. Like when someone's having a kid, they're about to have a kid,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a woman or a man, I don't say to them, oh, you know, because you can't explain it.
Right.
It's truly a thing that you can't explain. And you only sound like an idiot when you try going, well, here's what it is. No, you can't tell me. It's going to be unique to me.
Yeah.
And it's so much bigger than I ever could have imagined.
It's a different thing than you could ever imagine. Like, you become a different person, too. There's, like, an actual switch that seems to go off and a change of course.
By the way, let me just say something. Because you know people and I know people where, for whatever reason, that switch doesn't go off and they still stay the most important person in their own lives.
That's weird.
It's weird, and it throws me, and that's somebody I do not want to be friends with.
No, it's people that are bad parents that don't like their kids. It's a very unfortunate thing.
It's a big bowl of wrong. It's so sad. Yeah. It's painful.
I think there's certain, I mean, there has to be levels of sociopaths, right? There's levels of
I think there is. I mean, that's just me. I don't know anything about that topic.
There must be.
You see people with sociopathic behavior.
Yes.
And you just go, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, it's also the business that we're in, too. The business
it draws them.
Well, for sure. They want. I used to do a joke about it that the problem with actors is that they have this big hole in their soul that they need to fill up with other people's attention. And I would say, not me, I'm different. That's how I'm up here with a microphone.
Right. Well, by the way, comedians are completely different than for the most part, than actors.
Well, you get checks.
By the way, you also know that to be a great actor, you can be dumb as a rock.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only art. It's the only art form. Excuse me, I had a little hiccup something.
Something happened.
It's the only art form. And I know plenty of really intelligent actors, but I know some that are so talented, and if I could never have a conversation with them, I'd be thrilled.
Oh, it'd be amazing.
Because they're just so dumb.
Yeah, but when the time comes, and they said they can become that person, they can fall into that role, and there's something wrong with them, what they could do. Like, Wayne Fetterman has a bit about it. You know,
God
about,
bless you for just mentioning Wayne Fetterman.
Love Wayne Fetterman.
I love him so much.
I did a pilot with him way back in the day.
Did you?
Yeah.
He's just such a good egg. He's so funny.
Great guy. Very
he's
funny
a rock,
guy.
Man. But, and I've known him since I'm 20 years old. I met when I first started doing comedy.
Oh, wow.
I'm from Chicago, but I started comedy. I'd moved to Florida with my family, South Florida, and we're from the same little town in Florida called Plantation, Florida, outside of Fort Lauderdale.
We did a pilot together 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
1998, I think it was.
I think that was his last pilot.
You might be right.
But I love him so much.
He had a bit that he was doing on stage once about actors, and I grabbed him off stage. I go, dude, you said it. Like, the way you said it, you said it the right. Because, like, also, he's free.
Right.
Because, you know, he doesn't have notoriety. He's not worried about running into these people that he talks shit about on stage, so he can be free. And he was like, it's not normal to be able to cry on cue. He's like, yeah, you can cry on cue. Yeah, because you're fucking broken. There's something wrong with you.
by the way, that's another change in the world of stand-up. The number of people who and this started from the comedy boom when people were getting sitcoms.
Yeah.
Actors saw this and they went, oh, if I do stand-up, I'll be discovered.
Yes.
And so that's brought a lot of people that aren't truly comedians to comedy.
Yeah.
Which, and I can spot them. There was a dude.
You can spot him.
Oh, my God, yes. There was a dude at the Laugh Factory who was actually funny, and he was actually good. And he said, if I don't have a sitcom, I'm quitting by next year. And he didn't, and he quit.
Wow.
I don't remember his name. Otherwise, I'd tell you off there. I'll talk to you about it.
That's unfortunate.
No, so, but the point being is that if you're really a comedian, it is so part of your DNA. It is so part of who, you know, people's like, it's not who I am. No, comedians, it's part of who we are.
Yeah.
On a deep, deep level. The passion and caring that comedians truly have for comedy. And that's why I look at other comedians as my brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
So if you're dealing with ego, if you're dealing with, you're an actor, you're trying to get famous, if you're dealing with the competition, I got no part of you.
Yeah.
When you look at me and you go, Jeff Garlin has no choice but to be a comedian, then you're thinking on the same wavelength as me because I have no choice. I have to be a comedian.
Yeah, some people get very, very resentful of those actors. Like,
I don't get resentful of them, and there's plenty of room. And I remember some famous actors trying stand up. You know, in the '80s. Like, I remember, what's her name? She was Sean Young. Is that her name?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, she was coming into the improv, and I remember
she was doing stand up.
Well, but see, hers was full of shit. So I was like, I was the only one there who didn't help her. Everyone bent over backwards, but she wasn't sincere, and she did it for 5 minutes. But they liked being around a famous woman who's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, but the point being is that
people forgot about her.
Anyone can do whatever they want, but do me a favor. If you're going down that path, Don't screw me with your negative shit.
She's an interesting case. I read a whole article about her and fame and her struggles with it. And, you know, people forget she was in the original Blade Runner. She was a phenomenal actress.
And so beautiful.
Stunning.
Stunning, yeah.
But so good, too. I mean, just so able to absorb the role.
She probably was a very intelligent woman, and there were flaws in her life and flaws in being an actress. And by the way, being in the public eye is not, especially now with social media, is the opposite of a walk in the park. I am not entitled to any privacy. I am not entitled to any alone moments
when
I'm walking in a park. I'm not. And that saves me to look at it that way.
Yeah.
That I'm not entitled to it.
Right.
Because if I want to be alone, I'm going to stay in my living room.
Right.
I'm going to sit in my backyard and look up at the trees and the breeze. Man, oh, I can't see the breeze, but I can feel the breeze. But the point being is, there, the world of any privacy for you in the public eye, gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I'm at, like, a restaurant or the airport and the TMZ people come with their microphones, I don't say a word. Why help them sell that crap? And then they turn off the mic, and they know this at this point now. And I'm very friendly. How you guys doing? What's going on? And I know some of them, but I don't have the right to walk through the airport without them in my face. That's part of the thing.
The only thing you ever get out of those is you say something stupid and people get mad at you.
Right.
Like Anthony Bourdain.
The only thing you get out of that is saying something stupid and people get mad at you. There's no winning. There's no time when you're going to say something to TMZ and people are going to watch it and go, that was so damn insightful.
Well, it's possible. It's certainly possible you can, but a lot of times it's Baron on the spot.
That is Baron von Longshot. That is such a long shot.
It is a long shot.
Specifically TMZ.
Yeah, but Bourdain got a shitload of death threats when he was at the airport and they said, if you were going to cook dinner for Trump and Kim Jong-un, what would you serve? And he said, hemlock. You know, just a joke. He's a funny guy. He said something funny. And
no, but see, that's the thing. There's no winning.
Yeah, there's no winning.
Because, by the way, he could say that at a dinner party.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if someone's offended, then they're a tool.
Right.
You know, he could say that. By the way, he could say that in a room full of 11 Republicans.
Yes.
And they will laugh.
Yeah. But you're opening yourself up to the whole world.
That's right. So I don't say anything. You know, you can ask me comments about things that go on in the world, and I know I'll have an answer that will not get me in trouble.
That's the case today with comedy, right? It's like you're opening yourself up to the world. You're not just opening yourself up to the people.
But I never... When I went on stage, was ever in fear of going down a path where I would say something that was wildly inappropriate. Not inappropriate from the standpoint of taking a risk, but just because my sense of humor doesn't go the way to use certain words.
Like,
I don't use that word.
Right.
Not because I'm scared of anything, but so people who do that and do that, it's like...
Like Michael Richards.
Michael Richards.
Yeah, that's the worst example.
By the way, you know when he walked off stage, and I think it might have been Tom Papa who was standing in the corner, he went up to him and went, weird crowd. Having no idea that his life was over as he knew it.
Wow.
Weird crowd. Because, by the way, I remember being furious because certain people that came down to him on the news like the next day or two were people who I had heard say worse things in their stand-up.
And they were talking shit?
They were talking stuff. It's like when someone's swimming in a river of shit, you don't throw shit on them.
I agree.
Let them swim in their shit. Have a good time.
Yeah.
You chose to get in the shit pool, you know, but I'm not going to throw shit in there. It's loaded with shit.
How I felt with Roseanne, you know, when this Roseanne thing went down.
By the way, do you need to say anything else except she really needs some sort of help and support?
Yes.
Not like, oh, she's a Nazi or she's a horrible person. No. She needs help.
Yeah, she...
And that's the whole thing. Why do I need to... When Harvey Weinstein or any of these fuckers come out, I don't have a Twitter account because I also know, just like TMZ, how long till I say something that pisses somebody off.
Right.
But there are people... And I'm not saying their names. I don't want to get into a thing. Who will come out and go, gentlemen, that's not the way to behave. Or, you know what I mean? Like, really, do I need to say rape is bad?
Right.
Do I need to say calling a successful, accomplished black woman, something bad is bad? No, you don't need my comment. All these people on Twitter think their comment's necessary. Oh, I need to add into this. I need to be part of this dialogue. No.
Well, it's virtue signaling. You know, it's letting everybody know that I'm on the right side of this.
I'm on the right side. It's a bunch of crap.
Well, there was a guy who was angry.
I want people to assume that I'm making the right choice. I want people to assume, because they're not going to hear what my choice is.
There was a guy who was a journalist who was angry, and he was saying that the lack of blowback from other comedians about Louis C.K., that they weren't screaming at how horrible this is, speaks volumes. And I was like, look,
you know what
man,
speaks volumes?
That is
you
nothing.
Don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. That's what speaks volumes about this dude. He doesn't know what he's talking about. By the way, should anyone disrespect a woman? To my knowledge, never. Should anyone be sexually forward in a room, woman in an inappropriate way? No. Do I need to say that? Excuse me for yelling.
Right.
Do I need to come out and say this is wrong? No.
But this I'm telling you, this is within five days of the thing.
I know.
Five days of it coming out of him admitting that he did it.
Right.
The whole thing was crazy. Like this guy was accusing all of these other comedians of being pieces of shit because they are not
wrong.
They're not adamantly.
You don't need my opinion
condemnation.
on something.
Yeah.
If someone's swimming in a river of shit,
right.
I do not need to throw shit in that
river.
It's
like, what are your requirements as a person when something happens? If there's a mass shooting, do I need to stand up and say that was a bad thing?
Right. No.
No. It's obvious that was a bad thing. I don't know. Why do I need to comment on everything that happens?
Why do I need to comment?
And if that's the case,
is there an action I can do to help?
Right. Or is it just commenting, which does nothing?
Nothing. Nothing. Oh, really? You're letting us know? That's what I'm saying. These certain individuals, and I'm thinking of two in particular who I know and like both of them. Three of them, actually.
I
don't know as well. No, but I'll tell you afterwards.
Okay.
Always in these situations, say the obvious. Like, who wouldn't believe that? And I get furious.
Yeah.
Especially one of them's a great old friend of mine, and it's just a comment every time, and it's like...
Yeah, I have a friend that does the same thing, who's an accomplished stand-up, and it's always... How do I word this without giving this guy away? It's always about anything that has anything to do with women. Like, he's always standing up for women, but meanwhile, I know this guy lives in hell.
Right.
I know he lives in hell. Like, his marriage is shit. He, like, literally hides. Like, he's in hell. He's in hell. His wife's a monster.
It's amazing. it's amazing, though. By the way, isn't it amazing, though?
It is. Yeah. It's just like they almost like he's like hoping like when
I
the divorce comes like down the line, which is definitely going to come, like at least he'll have established himself as like a really good guy.
I will have irreverent conversations with my friends, drinking coffee, hanging out. Sometimes I even talk too loud in a coffee shop.
Hey, he's talking shit. You're having fun.
By the way, here's another one you know. The worst possible things you could ever hear, comedians at a funeral. Especially if a comedian dies, what comedians are saying to one another.
Oh,
It is stuff that would be unforgiven.
Yeah.
Unforgiven, but it's just the way we deal with grief in those situations.
Well, it's also the inappropriate thing at that time is very funny to someone like you or I. Like,
very, very funny.
I was sitting right next to Dave Foley, and we went to the Emmys, and Phil Hartman had just been murdered, and he was nominated for an Emmy, and he lost to this guy from Frasier. And Dave looks over at me, and he goes, what the fuck does the guy have to do to win?
That's great.
And we're like crying, sad, we're drinking, and we're just so bummed out at his death.
Right.
And then Dave says that, and he says it with like a total straight face. What the fuck's this guy have to do to win? And I'm like,
that's really funny.
Because in the moment, it was just
perfect. Say the most inappropriate things in tragic moments.
To make each other laugh.
To make each other laugh. But I'm not going to say them on my Twitter.
No.
I'm not going to say them to other people.
No.
By the way, anytime I have ever tried something sort of inside with someone not on the inside in terms of comedy, it has been a
disaster
every time.
How about
I'm talking about even privately, like with at a party or something.
Or
it's
worse,
like,
what about with your kids' parents, your kids' friends' parents?
By the way, the biggest fights with my wife, I look back over the years, are when we either went to the principal, we went to have the meeting, we went to the open house,
yes,
something I said.
Yes.
I never left there unscathed. The only one that you couldn't get that mad at me for was I convinced our tour of a school that the building was haunted. That was the only time where she went, that was kind of funny, but you freaked everybody out, including the school officials, so...
Yeah, inappropriate. You're inappropriate, Jeff Garland.
I am a big bowl of inappropriate.
You have to be.
But it's sort of how we get through life. We, meaning
yes.
comedians.
Well,
and the thing is, we're wired alike. We share, I'm not going to say DNA.
Yes.
But we share something. We're a brotherhood and sisterhood. We're together. So I remember coming off stage. This is like a classic one. Coming off stage at Caroline's, doing a benefit. No, not coming off stage. Waiting to go on stage. Colin's on stage. Colin Quinn. And he's fucking eating it. And I'm thinking, this crowd sucks. Fuck them. But I'm going to go do my best. It's a benefit. Some guy comes up to me and he says, I can't wait till you go up. I go, thanks. He goes, this guy, I can't. I go, just know you're talking about my brother. My brother is standing up there doing that. You're not complimenting me if you're fucking with my brother. That's what I told him. Because it's the truth.
Right.
We are together. We experience yeah. something. But that's what I'm saying. There's a uniqueness and a specialness, and not everybody is part of that. Everybody is an actor trying. Not, I mean, a lot of people are actors.
Yeah.
A lot of people are in it because their ego. Their singing voice maybe wasn't good enough. Like, I'm just saying, it's mm-hmm. like. And by the way, the people that I have problems with, almost never are true comedians.
Yeah.
Like to where it's the brother, you know, and like where it really, when we're together, you know, it's almost never, it's always ego people. And it's always people that are doing it for the wrong reasons. And by the way, it's not me sitting in judgment. It's me getting what they give me.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I don't have conflicts with them. I let them, you know, that's something I learned a long time ago. That's ego, to put my shit on them.
Right, right.
But I drive home feeling sad.
Yeah,
and so
learned,
I avoid doing that.
I've learned to not have conflicts. Took a while.
You don't, yeah.
Before, when I would disagree with something, I'd be like, fuck you. But that fuck you doesn't get anywhere. It's like the same thing as like when something happens and you complain about it on Twitter.
But I have
you're not
to say
changing.
Something. Let's talk about change. Did you read about that girl from Sweden? It's from Sweden, maybe, who got on the airplane with the guy who was being sent to Afghanistan?
I did read that this morning.
I have never been more... I
the guy was being deported. She wouldn't sit down.
She knew when he gets back, he's going to die. He's going to be murdered, this guy. That was her attitude.
What is this stuff? Because I only read the headline of it.
Well,
I didn't read the whole story.
So she's on the plane, specifically bought a ticket, knowing that he's being deported.
So she did it on purpose. She's an activist.
She's an activist, but I don't know what she's done in the past. All I know is she refused to sit down. And at a certain point, there was a soccer team on the flight, stood up with her. There were other people who said, we back you. But there were also a lot of pieces of shit. Sit down. You're making us late. Someone's going to die. And look at her putting herself on the line. And then she and the guy who was being deported were finally escorted off the plane because she did her research. And her research told her that the captain can have them both taken off the plane and take off anytime he wants.
So the story was that he was being deported because of ICE? Is that what it was?
I only read the one story.
See if you can find it, Jamie. So, but they were deporting him,
yes.
And then he was going to get sent back to Afghanistan,
yes.
where he was going to be killed.
Yes.
We live in a weird time when it comes to this.
We live in a weird time.
There was
a story
I was reading about some woman who was devastated because her her daughter-in-law was being deported, and she was a Trump supporter, and her daughter-in-law was been in the United States her whole life and being deported, and you know just couldn't believe it. Came over here as an infant, that kind of thing. When you're an illegal alien, that no one gives a fuck if you've been here for 30 years, you've only been alive for 32.
They don't get it.
You get sent back, and that's a disgrace. It really is a disgrace.
No, it's a horrible thing. And so,
people are like, well, why don't you fucking try to get your
citizenship? Seeing this young girl, believing so strongly that she bought a ticket, got on the plane, and then wouldn't sit down.
But what happens now, though? What if the guy still gets sent back and he still gets killed?
But she did something. And maybe he won't.
Yeah.
You don't know. But that's more than just her putting on her Twitter account. This is not right.
Right.
People being deported. This is someone actually doing something.
Yeah.
It's hard doing to do. Something that doesn't injure somebody else. And it can inconveniences people, but nothing more than that.
What if you had a layover, though? You had a big gig.
What if I had a layover?
Yeah, it was a huge gig.
I'm on her side.
Oh, come on,
I know
man.
That from the
what
get-go.
If you had a sold-out
no,
crowd?
No, I don't care.
Filming a Netflix special?
No.
Are you going to film a special?
I am. Next spring.
So when you do
after
that.
After I'm done with the Goldbergs and Curb, I'm going to do a Netflix special.
So a year from now, essentially, somewhere in the range.
What is it now?
Summer.
Oh, less than a year
less
from now.
Year. So when you do that, will you change your approach? Will you have an outline like you do on Curb and like roughly know what you're going to talk about?
I have stories and things I've been telling on stage that have been coming out of me. So I will tell all those, but I'm doing three different locations here in L.A. and three different shows.
So you're going to film it here?
I'm filming it here, three shows. I'm not doing a big theater. I mean, I've played big theaters, but that doesn't help me for a special.
Mm.
That's just the typical come out to the big applause, do my shtick, good night, everybody.
Right, right.
No, I'm going to actually... Papa's going to actually direct this.
Oh, beautiful.
It was his idea. He's going to follow me around during the day and then how my day comes into my show that night.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I love
it. But I'll have some prepared. But between three shows, I should get enough. And, you know, hopefully it'll be an interesting thing. That's what I aspire to do. Make something worthwhile and interesting as opposed to filling my ego. I don't care.
Can we do this again sometime?
My friend, I am honored. It's too long in coming, and I'm thrilled to have been here. People ask me, I'm like, you know, I don't really know Joe. I go, but the first chance I get, which was the other night when I saw you, where it was like, oh, hey, can I do the thing I really want to? And you're like, yeah, sure. You know, it was so simple. But people have said to me all the time, go on the show, and I'm like, yeah, I will, you know. But being busy like yourself, it's not like that opportune or I have a list. Call Joe, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So.
We did it.
We did.
It worked.
And I will again anytime you
want.
Let's
do it.
Yes.
It works.
It was an honor.
This was great.
I had a ball.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
Jeff Garland, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, brother.
Thank you.